Do we need to get an attorney or some medical management for this? Should we clear our liability somehow, Scott? This sounds like a potential lawsuit.
Welcome to the Trailhead of Trail Runner Nation. We go on virtual trail runs with fun, interesting guests that are going to teach us how to be better trail runners, how to be healthier, stronger, faster, and maybe how to be a better human being. If it's your first time, we welcome you. The trail is open to all.
And hey, I tell you, our good friend Scott War, he reached deep into the drop bag of bizarreness today, and you're in for something wild.
So jump on the conga line, hang on, and enjoy the trip. Every morning starts out with AG1. You know why I know it's morning, Scott? Because I have a glass full of AG1.
Let me tell you something that I don't know why I didn't pay attention to the directions when I was using AG1. But it says to shake the AG1 for like a few minutes. I used to just put the scoop of AG1 in there, shake it like 3 or 4 times and down it. After I started shaking it for like 2 minutes, boy, it smooths the drink out. Boy, it is like silk on my tongue, Don.
Well, that's a little strong, Scott, silk on the tongue. But did you read the back of the package where it says AG1 has 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food sourced nutrients in one convenient daily serving? That's just one scoop, 8 ounces of water. That's all you need, really.
Improve your health and immunity with AG1's conveniently daily nutrition, and you can get a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase by clicking the link in our deals page at trailrunnernation.com.
Exoskin.us, they are premium running gear that if you don't have, you ought to get.
Have you ever felt like you're in a rut? You need something to pull you out of the situation you're in? Well, I found a new piece of gear helps.
Exoskin has the right gear for the right season too, Don. We just got a new pair of the Exo underwear, the 3/4 length, I believe it is. It comes down a little bit lower and it warms your legs on those cold winter days.
And there's a reason for that. They have 2 patented yarns the company invented to reduce friction, prevent chafing, and hot spots. Fast evaporation of moisture off the skin, and that's the secret. You want to feel comfortable? Wear Exoskin.
They're super lightweight and unique mesh holes to maximize airflow, and you can get 10% off their already reduced customer direct model by going to exoskin.us and using the code TRN.
Exoskin.us. Use the coupon code TRN for 10% off.
Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott War.
And my name is Don Freeman.
I'm Andy Jones-Wilkins.
Glad you could join us for an edition of Drop Bag. We're just talking about whether this should be Drop Bag or an audio magazine episode. Those who are listeners to the Trail Runner Nation podcast know that there's a fine line that separates Drop Bag and audio magazine. And today Don has decided, because he didn't have any titles, that we're going to do Drop Bag. So Drop Bag is easy. We do not know what each other's topics are, and we're just going to reach deep into the drop bag. And just like you're out at an aid station and you reach in there and you're hoping to get that squirrel's nut butter and you pull out an old Snickers bar, right? You never know what you're going to get.
And what actually happens is, Scott, you're starting to feel a little bit of chafage and you're thinking, I hope my drop bag is there. And number two, if it is, I hope I pack the squirrel's nut butter, because if I didn't, I don't know what I'm going to do.
And the chocolate from the Snickers bar is not going to help with the chafage. No, guaranteed.
Hey, there's a familiar voice. I've actually heard that voice on a recent new podcast out there called Crack a Brew.
Yeah, Andy, we're gonna actually talk about that a little bit at the end of this episode. But tell us what Crack a Brew with AJW is, for those who don't know.
Oh, it's the best podcast in the history of podcasts. thanks to you guys, it started a couple of months ago. It is a short form podcast that I that I put out. I just finished the first season. We had 8 episodes. We had a lot of fun with those 8 episodes. And the concept is pretty simple. It's called Crack a Brew with AJW. I invite a guest on. Their one requirement is to bring a beverage of their choice, a beer, a cup of coffee, something else. We crack the beer or the brew and have a conversation for just about the amount of time it takes to enjoy that beverage. So all of the episodes in season one are about 45 to 50 minutes, and we had a blast with it. So it's a great new podcast, and I'm looking forward to launching season two in a few weeks now.
Nice.
Well, and pay attention. We're going to actually talk a little bit more about Crack a Brew with AJW at the end of this episode. And see what he learned, see what things he learned from the guests. He got some pretty high-profile guests. So
they're the who's who of trail running, that's for sure.
They are. All right, so let's go with oldest to youngest here. And I think Don gets to start because he's the oldest. Reach into that drop bag, Freeman.
Well, as I'm reaching in looking for that squirrel's nut butter, just hoping that some comes out, and if I have it, I hope it's not empty and used from the last race. But what I've found is something that I was supposed to come up with an article, and as I'm searching and looking, I just didn't find anything that seemed to fit, and all of a sudden, I had an idea. I had a thought about a discussion point. So I'm breaking the rules a little bit, but anybody that's listened to this show know that usually I don't follow the rules to this anyway.
Never. Never. And that's the fun part. That's probably the best part of this.
Unless you're making the rules, you're not following them.
And so, you know, I had a thought, you know, for many of us, we look back and we think, you know, things were easier then. And when I say look back, if you've been new in the sport, you know, looking back might not be very far. But as we look back, we think, you know, I used to recover quicker. You know, I used to be faster. You know, I used to like doing that run. But now that we're a little bit more mature or moving on, I think to myself, wait a minute, what do I do that I'm better at? Instead of what do I miss, what have I improved in? Guys, what do you think? Not about my topping, but what's something that you do better now than you've ever done in the past?
And we're talking running, right?
Let me remind you, Scott, Trail Runner Nation. Yeah, we're talking running. What is it? What is it, Andy? I'm giving up on Scott. He needs to think about it. What do you do now better than you did back in, say, 2005?
I do think this is a good topic to start out with, Don. So thanks for bringing it up. This is actually an easy one for me. I think back when I was younger and maybe a little more feisty, I didn't always let the run come to me. And let me explain this a little bit. I would go out the door or get out the car and head out on the trail and literally within seconds or minutes expect the run to expect to be getting in the flow and going with the flow and enjoying the run and being like on my A game. You know, I just expected. It was kind of like a bowler who expected to get a strike on the very first strike or a golfer who wanted to make every single putt. I just felt like every single run I went out on had to be perfect. And if it wasn't, then it was a crap run. And I think what I do better now is I take the good with the bad. I take the crap runs with the good runs. But I also have come to learn and understand and accept that sometimes the run comes to you. Sometimes the first 30 minutes of that run, the misery of those first 30 minutes are rewarded by the joy and the wonder of that second 30 minutes. Or the pain of the uphill at the beginning of the run is rewarded with the wonderful, smooth flowiness of the downhill. And so that's something that I think I've improved on. And I think it also has a lesson for life, right? Where you might wake up on the wrong side of the bed and just like, this is just going to be a crappy day. Well, let the day come to you. Maybe it'll get better. Have that cup of coffee, read the newspaper, listen to the news, get out of your hole and find a way to let it come to you. So it's not easy to do, but it's something I think I've improved at. And I hope I can continue to improve on even as I get older.
I like that. I like it. How about you, Scott? Is there something you're better at now than you were when you started the sport, or you were in your peak?
I'm a better power hiker for sure. I can walk. I can walk way better. That was one thing that, you know, we've all talked about that until you've been out there for a long time that you think you should be running all of this. And there's definitely areas that you should be walking. And I found that I have patience and a little more grace that I give myself to say, you know what? I don't need to run that. There's what's the benefit of running that? If I walk it, it's going to shorten my finish time by a minuscule amount of time. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to take my time, and I'm going to be patient with myself.
Well, I think that's, you know, another good answer, and it shows that we've been running together a while, Scott, because you're right down where I was thinking too. A little more grace, a little more compassion to ourselves. Not feeling guilt if we don't hit a certain marker or a certain time, or not saying, wow, today was kind of a wasted run. I finished, you know, 10 minutes slower than I usually do. And I don't think that I feel that anymore. I'm just happy to be out there. I feel more joy and acceptance of whatever's happening is good. And that's how I view it now. Scott?
You know, you mentioned the word guilt, and Don and I have probably done two or three runs where the theme on those runs were guilt. We should do a podcast episode on guilt.
On the single word? We've done that. We've done single word podcasts before with AGW.
We've done whole runs, Don, 2-hour runs where we've talked about guilt and is it good? Is it bad? Is it a motivator? Is it something like an anchor to you? You know, guilt would be a fun topic, I think.
Absolutely. I'm reminded too, Scott, I believe it was you now probably almost a year ago. And with the podcast, our episode wandered into a discussion of you driving to the trailhead where you knew Don was going to meet you. And you wanted nothing more than to turn your truck around and go back home and get back under the covers. But you knew that Don was coming, and you were guilted into having to go for that run. And of course, it turned out to be a perfectly fine run, and you let the run come to you. But you could have easily in that moment said, no, Freeman, I'm turning around, going back, and missed out on that opportunity.
So that's a great example of how guilt can be good, right? Because a lot of times we think guilt is in a negative context. And anyway, I that is true. And in fact, most of my runs are based on guilt, Andy. Guilt for that nice, sweet dessert that I had the night before.
Right.
And that was, you know, my thought on the discussion when this idea came to me is that, you know, there are some things that I look back and think, you know, I was better at leg turnover back then, but I think I'm better at some other things like seeing problems, like solving problems, like just enjoying the run at however it looks. It doesn't matter. So I think I have more an adult relationship with running now than I used to.
And at the end of the day, we want running to be something that we enjoy, that brings us joy, that's a break from the rest of our lives. And I think as you get older and realize that life has a way of coming at you quickly and aggressively, having that moment, that 4 to 5 to 6 to 10 miles on the trail, even just a couple of times a week, kind of makes the rest of it all worthwhile.
You know you're doing it right if you wake up and are excited to be out there, regardless of how far you go or the pace that you go. You know, Don, I was going to say, you know, even since I've known you, one of the things that you're better at is your running form, your gait. You spend a lot of time really trying to perfect that and get better and be more efficient in your gait. And I should have paid attention and maybe followed your lead there a little bit more. But I notice a difference in your gait and how efficient you are.
You know, if I was listening to this podcast and I was pushing for podium, I would think, why am I listening to these old has-beens that are talking about enjoying slowing down? But I think the point is, even podium pushers and chasers should take time to enjoy that run, to give themselves a break for a day, not always push, 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 but they need to just enjoy, smile, and take it easy and be okay with it, because there's plenty of days to push hard, but there are also days to just relax and enjoy.
Well, and I think that your point, Don, is that we should become better every day. And better doesn't necessarily mean faster. It may mean faster if someone's just starting to run, getting better, going, getting a half a mile down the road before you have to take a break, a walk break, or getting a mile down the road before you have to take a walk break, or doing your first 5K or 10K, getting better. And getting better does not mean that once you've reached your peak fitness, your peak age and athletic ability, it doesn't mean that you start regressing. You can still be better, but you can be better at other things than being fast.
You know, this was supposed to be more than one topic on this podcast, but it could be completely on this. Getting better could just be your execution. It could be just your management. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have anything to do with just the clock. It could be having everything to do with the internal chatter in your head, or how you just to manage your fuel or hydration. There's so many things that you can do besides race the clock. These are excuses for slow guys. But for all you fast guys, these are important things too, and gals.
Good topic, Don. Thank you very much. All right, Andy. Well, actually, am I older than you, Andy? I think we were born in the same year. I was born in April. What year were you born?
Month? September of 1967.
Okay, I'm older than you. Same year, different month.
Scott's beard is older. Scott's beard is old. Yeah, yeah, so yeah. I don't even know why I went before him. Scott,
you're up. What's in your drop bag?
All right, here is mine. And if this was Audio Magazine, the title would be. No, I'm going to reach deep into it, and I feel something in there. It's kind of in a box. And I pull it. It's actually a pretty big box. And I pull it out, and it's the game, the board game Wheel of Fortune.
In your drop bag?
In my drop bag. I don't know how it got there. It's a big drop bag. Victory Sport Design made this. It's one of the biggest ones I have. And I pull it out, and it's the Wheel of Fortune board game. And I pull it out, and there's a little spinner on it. I'm going, why in the heck would I put the Wheel of Fortune spinner in my drop bag?
You're taking care of your crew. You need something to do waiting for you, Scott.
They have a long time to wait. Exactly. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
They could have put Monopoly in there.
Yeah, I'm not that slow. Monopoly takes like days, doesn't it? Well, anyway, I want to tell you about a race that uses a Wheel of Fortune or a roulette wheel. In the most recent edition of Ultra Running Magazine, they highlight a race in there that I have never heard of, and it is so unique, it excites me. I may have to go to Kansas. This race is called the Cactus Roulette, and it's a race in Clinton Lake State Park in Lawrence, Kansas. It's organized by the Lawrence Trailhawks Running Group. Here is the uniqueness about this race. There are three. It's not a distance race. It's a timed race. So there's a 24-hour category, two 12-hour categories. One is called the Owl, and one is called the Lark. So you can take 12 hours in the morning in the daylight, or you can do 12 hours at night. So you can choose day or night. There's both two 12-hour, and then there's also a 6-hour category. Here's how it's different. The course consists of three different loops ranging from 1.9 miles to 3.6 miles, and they all have varying terrain and elevation. So the first one is the Swim Beach, which is pretty technical. It's 3.6 miles with about 253 feet of elevation, which is a lot for Kansas. I've been to Kansas. That's a lot of elevation. The Cactus Ridge, which is also technical, it's 2.6 miles with 239 feet of elevation. There's the Bunker Hill Loop, which is a cross-country groomed trail. It's only 1.9 miles, and it only has about 150 feet of elevation, but it has two pretty steep climbs. Now, each loop begins at the base camp, and after each loop, the runner crosses the finish line, and they earn a poker chip that represents the number of miles that they ran. Then they spin the roulette, and it lands on the next loop that they're supposed to run. So let's say that I spin it and I hit the Bunker Hill. I have to go out 1.9 miles. It's a cross country, pretty fast. I do the 1.9 miles. I get back. I get my poker chip that is worth 1.9 miles. Spin it again. I could get Bunker Hill. I could get Cactus Ridge. I could get Swim Beach. But I keep coming back. And after each thing, I earn a poker chip that's worth the amount of miles. And then I spin the thing again. It could be feasible that over the 24 hours you run just one of the loops, the 1.9 mile loop, or the others, right? And so it's just this. I can see Don's face right now. He hates looped races, and he's just cringing right now because he's going, "I would never want to do this." Now, there's some other things. So when you're finally done, you have to have a completed loop to be done. You take all your poker chips and you cash out. So you go to the race director and you say, okay, here's all my chips. And then they count up how many miles you ran. There's also a place where you can rest. It's a heated tent and it's called the High Roller Lounge, which I think is amazing.
Does it cost you to go in?
I don't know whether you have to pay chips to get in. I don't know whether I would ever go in. I don't know if the value of a chip would ever be worth sitting down. It depends on how cold it gets in Kansas. I don't know. But anyway, I just love that they've taken and just done something so creative to create this fun timed race. Have you ever heard of anything similar to this?
AJW, you lived in Kansas a few times, didn't you?
I've not heard of anything quite that crazy. I am reminded, however, of a great race that existed for just a few years out in Southern California called the Coyote Two Moon that was put on by Chris Scott at the time. And the Coyote Two Moon was a race was a 100-mile race with about, typically 80 or so starters. And it was a handicapped start designed to have everyone finish basically at the same time. So people who expected to take the longest would start at 5 p.m. on Friday night, and then there'd be a group that would start at 10 p.m. on Friday night, at 2 a.m. Saturday morning, at 5 a.m. Saturday morning, and at 9 a.m. Saturday morning. And they would all run this 100-mile course and all more or less finish within the same few hours. And it was pretty festive, actually, as everybody started to come together. And it was nothing quite like that, but it was the context of it was you had different groups of people running the same race, but differently. And I think that, Scott, your point about, you know, you could end up, if you were a bad spinner, you could end up doing the same loop over and over and over again, which might eventually make you want to go right into the High Rollers Lounge and just go to sleep.
You know, I like that two moon race you're talking about, because at the end, when you just start slogging it in and not worrying about anything, all of a sudden you have all these other people coming with you and you're thinking, gosh, I don't want to be the last guy stumbling in when we're all supposed to be finishing the same. I think it would give me a little extra go when I needed to get up.
It was great. Scott, you'd appreciate this. One of the years I did it, your good friend David Goggins was running the race. And not surprisingly, he went out like a bandit, like he was an hour ahead of everybody. But lo and behold, daylight comes on the second day, and you have all these finishers closing in. And who were they all closing in on up ahead on the trail? Was David Goggins there with no shirt on, just kind of walking with a limp. And all of us just sort of converged. Some people who had started started at 5 p.m., others who had started at 5 a.m., just converged on Goggins and sort of swallowed him up. And then we all kind of finished together in a group of about 12. It was hilarious.
I love the idea of bringing some creativity to these races. I think I may have mentioned this on the podcast before, but I have not seen it in trail, but on road races, there was a time where I think it was in Utah, maybe it was started somewhere else, but they had these runs called predict runs. And what it was a certain length, let's say it's a 10K, and you would go and you would say, I'm going to run this 10K in, an hour and 5 minutes. And you were not allowed to use any kind of timing devices. And you were, when they hit go, you ran out there. And the one who got closest to their predicted finish time won the race. So it kind of levels the playing field, or at least those who know their paces really well have an advantage. Anyway, I think that's kind of fun to mix it up.
I've often thought, you know how in biathlon the where they ski and they shoot guns in the Olympics,
yeah,
and if they miss the target with the shooting, that they have to take a penalty lap. Right. And
yeah.
So, I would, if there was some I don't know if it would be shooting, but if there was some version of running where like you would run a loop and you would come back and maybe you'd have to answer a trivia question or something. If you answered it right, you got to take like a little shortcut. But if you answered it wrong, you had to take a penalty lap.
That's the other board game that's in my drop bag is Trivial Pursuit. That's a great idea.
These things remind me of back in the high school days when we used to have bracket racing. We'd go to within was Sears Point Raceway, and we'd bring the cars that we drove to school. Of course, we would uncap the mufflers so they sounded like drag cars, and we went out there, and you'd have to predict the time that you would finish in. So you could race, a dragster that got it done in 12 seconds, and you would get it done in 21 seconds. I was in my Ford Pinto, and, it didn't have second gear, so I had to go first to third to really get down the thing. But you could have a chance of beating the 12-second car if you hit your time closer than he did. So you'd come through the finish line, at the same time. It would be, the ultimate finish. Everybody hits their time.
Well, I want to give kudos to the Lawrence Trailhawks running group for coming up with this unique race. And boy, if you're listening out there and you've heard of other unique races, boy, I'd love to hear about those. That may be the push that I need to get over that fence to register for a race, Andy.
You knew that was coming, right, Andy?
I knew he was going to throw. He was going to throw me down there.
That may be what you need to put a bib on is to go out to Kansas and do a Wheel of Fortune.
Yep. Exactly. All right, Andy. Youngest goes last.
Well, I thought we would close up the drop bag segment with some actual practical discussion. so I'm reaching deep down into the drop bag here. Hang on a second. It's actually my drop bag bookshelf, and deep in the drop bag bookshelf is a classic old book. I think a person we've had on the podcast before. It's John Vonhoff's book, Fixing Your Feet.
Yes.
It's now been through about 15 editions. I spend time with John and his trusty sidekick every summer at Michigan Bluff at Western States. And the reason that this is in the drop bag this year is, as we were talking about before we started recording, or actually we were probably recording and just didn't know it, we were talking about the absolutely epic weather conditions that much of the country have faced this year, especially California and other parts of the Western United States. And as we're recording this at the end of March, there's a lot of people looking ahead to big summer races in places that are very likely to be quite snowy. And if they're not snowy, they're going to be wet and muddy and slick and are probably going to do a number on people's feet. All of us here on the panel have been running ultras for a long time and have had our fair share of foot issues. So I thought with this drop bag segment, we might talk about what little tricks of the trade. You know, there are probably people listening to this right now are like, oh my gosh, Western States is in a few months, and I waited 8 years to get in, and it looks like by all accounts the entire thing is covered with snow, and the part that's not covered with snow is mud, or maybe I'm running my first 200 miler at the Tahoe 200, which is in mid-June now. There's going to be a lot of snow there. What am I going to do? So what are some tips of the trade that we might have for our listeners that John Vonhoff and his trusty sidekick Tanya might have taught us of how to care for those feet, especially when they get wet and snowy and gritty and we have to deal with it? Because before we know it, that time is going to be here. And as we all know, bad feet can ruin a race in a hurry. Don, you want to start?
Yeah, I'll start. You know, what came to my mind as you said that is it's not necessary for every run, but there are some runs that it is absolutely essential. And that's to put on a good set of gaiters. Something to keep that dust, the rocks, the debris, the snow, all the stuff from that wants to jump inside the shoe from doing just that, because that's the blister, the chafage, the irritation. So a good set of gaiters. And I have a pair, and I've only worn them when it's appropriate. I don't think they're necessary for your everyday runs. Absolutely not. But they sure can be helpful in those kind of conditions where things can jump up and jump in. What do you think? What do you think, guys? Do you,
Scott?
I still want to go on gaiters. You just can't have me drop gaiter knowledge and not have you have some kind of comment.
Oh yeah, okay. I forgot about.
I
that.
I agree with Don.
I yeah. forgot about that part.
Okay.
Every time I use gaiters, they slip around and then they cause chafing on my ankles, and I take them off and throw them in the woods.
I said a good set of gaiters. Okay, thanks for recognizing my comment. Go ahead.
You know, I would say this. I don't usually wear gaiters, but if it's an A race and it's long and you think that there could be a lot of dust or you know, in this case, early snow in the morning is crystallized, so it's almost like little pieces of glass. And if you can keep that out of your shoe, why not put on some kind of protective gaiter? I think it's a great idea. If they cause chafage, you can throw them in the trees.
All joking aside, I think the key, yes, gaiters can make or break a day out there. You've really, really got to get a nice, good fitting pair that not only fit around your sort of lower leg well, but strap well to your shoe. I mean, I will say not all gaiters are created equal. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. I have a couple tips that I've learned over the years, and I can't remember if I gained them from John's book or not. But the first one I'm going to tell you is if after you get a blister and you're in an aid station and you're popping it with a needle, a sterilized needle, if you actually are using a needle and you put some thread on the needle and run the needle through one side of the blister and out the other side of the blister and leave the thread in the blister, it's amazing what that can do. What it does is typically when you pop your blister, you can get a lot of the stuff out of there, but as the liquid starts coming back, it seals the hole and you get another blister. If you keep that thread in there, it does two things. One, it helps wick away any new moisture, any of that pus that starts forming. It will wick that away outside of the blister and it keeps those holes open. So that's one thing that has been a lifesaver for me. Have you guys heard of that before?
No, in fact, I thought that was an April Fool's or something.
No, it works. Is that true? It's amazing. I think I heard it from, I learned this maybe from some through hikers that they would do that, that they would use the thread and you leave the thread in the blister. Now at night you take it out and, you know, do some doctoring on your feet, but it works really, really well.
Do we need to get an attorney or some medical management for this? Should we clear our liability somehow, Scott? This sounds like a potential lawsuit. Are we okay with this?
I don't know why you're so worried about having a thread in a blister.
Well, I don't know. It's the amputation below the knee that worries me.
I do know that I'm 80% sure the next tip that I have was from John's book. There's some liquid that it's hard to find in drugstores now, but you can find it online. It's called tincture of benzoin. And for me, I usually have issues with blisters, especially on my heels. So I do preventative taping. And if you use that tincture of benzoin and apply that pre-taping, it makes your skin super, super sticky and tacky so that that tape stays on and doesn't fall off as easy. And I think it's amazing stuff. Don, you did a lot of taping of people's feet and ankles. What did you use tincture of benzoin?
I didn't. I just took out the old spray can and sprayed off the things because that's what you do before you put athletic tape on. And I use like, that. It said Kramer on it.
Like 3M adhesive spray?
Something like that, yeah. It would act much like duct tape. You just get some old bed sheets and spray that stuff on and wrap them up and off they go.
You got to do what you got to do.
At Trail Runner Nation, we love our partners, and one of them that we love is Native.
Don, I love getting out in the sun and absorbing vitamin D. It's good for me. It makes me happy. Recently, I was in Hawaii, and there's a lot of sun there, and I didn't have a lot of sun exposure because it's springtime, and I was really nervous about damaging my skin. And that's when I used Native's new sunscreen. And boy, is it good. I applied it probably 3 times a day. It's not greasy. It absorbs quickly into the skin. And I'm protected from those damaging rays.
Scott, we're out there and we do hard things. And one of the things that we don't need to add is abuse to our skin. It's our largest organ on our body, Scott. And we got to take care of it.
And this is what you need to do to get your deal. Go to nativedo.com/TRN. Or you can use the code TRN at checkout to get 20% off your first order. That's nativedeo.com/TRN or use the code TRN at checkout.
Andy, what's your biggest foot aha?
Mine's a really simple one, but it's extremely important. And I remember learning it really early in my running 100 miles career. And that is, as soon as you feel the slightest little bit of hot spot or poking into your foot or as soon as you feel it, literally the moment is like, take care of it, deal with it, whatever that means. So many people might be like, oh, I'm 2 miles from the aid station. I'll take care of it there. Or, oh, you know what? My feet will dry and it'll probably go away. Or, oh, it's probably not a blister starting or a hot spot. It's probably just a rock in my shoe and I'll move the rock around and it'll be okay. The best advice I ever got is stop right there where you are. Take your shoe and sock off. Find what that is. You may not doctor it right there, but you'll identify it. Maybe you need to clean some grit out. Maybe you'll be like, okay, I've got to take care of this and change socks at the next aid station, or maybe just pop this right here and there. Really, 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 with feet issues, no joke, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Like, if you just do those little things, the 2 minutes you spend taking whatever rock out of there or taking care of that little hot spot, that 2 minutes you spend at mile 22 is going to save you 2 hours at mile 72 when you're on the table and someone's taping you up and everything else. So absolutely, these are all great ideas. I mean, except maybe the thread one, but these are all really good ideas. And yet the biggest and best piece of advice is early prevention.
So I'm going to ask you, Andy, and I'm so glad you brought that up again about the thread thing, because I think it's important for us to kind of lay low on that.
Distance ourselves.
Yeah, as a position of the podcast, that is not our exact position, but you know, to each his own. Here's my question to you. You're going to run a 100-mile race, and do you bring somewhere in a drop bag a pair of socks and a pair of shoes, and do you expect to use them? So one, do you bring a pair, and do you plan on using a pair?
Do you bring a pair? Do you have a pair?
That's our thread guy. Just ignore him. Go ahead.
I've often felt like bringing the extra shoes and socks is kind of like bringing a raincoat, that if you didn't have the extra pair of shoes and socks, you were probably going to need them. But if you have them in there, if you have the extra pair of shoes and socks in a couple of drop bags, or you have your crew carrying them, then you're probably not going to need them. So I can think of the 40 or so 100-milers I've done, I probably changed shoes and socks 5 times. Right. But the 5 times I did, I was really, really, really happy that I had them there. And the other 35 times, well, my crew just walked around the whole course with an extra pair of shoes and socks, or there were extra shoes and socks in the golf bag. But again, that's sort of an ounce of, or, you know, and there's something too, right? I think we can all understand this. You've been in wet feet for hours, and you know, just 2 miles up ahead, sitting in that nice warm drop bag is a nice, clean, fresh pair of socks. You just know they're there. And mentally, that does so much for you. Just, you know, to take those, even if you put the same shoes back on, the same wet, nasty shoes, but with a fresh pair of dry socks. Oh, it's just incredible. So absolutely, always bring those extra shoes and socks. Even if no one's going to force you to use them, but if they're there and you use them, great. If they're there and you don't use them, no harm, no foul.
Yeah.
Yeah. And some long races that I've had those extra shoes there, I've had a set that were a little more stacked, a little more cushioned to them, and a dry pair of socks and a different pair of shoes. All of a sudden, the bend points and the strike points are different than they have been for the last X miles. It's like, this feels better. It's not hitting that same spot. I have a little more protection there. It's not bending in that same spot. Sure feels good. And like you said, there's no extra entry fee. You don't have to buy a bib for those shoes. You just throw them in your drop bag.
I have a foot question for you to get both of your opinion.
Thread?
What kind of thread? Here's the question. As we're out training for these, we often get blisters. We get calluses on our feet. Should we baby our feet? Should we take the calluses and you know, get one of those little files or whatever, and should we take those calluses off, or should we keep them there because it's tough? It makes our feet tough. What's your view on calluses?
You want to go, AJW? I've got a few comments on it, but I think I'm probably smarter to listen to yours first.
I had several conversations with the man himself, John Vonhoff, about this, and it's a little bit of it depends. Mm-hmm. You know, you get those big thick calluses on your heels, for example, or on the outer part of your big toe, you're better off keeping those intact or just filing them down a little bit. But if you get some calluses in places where, especially on the outer part of your foot, where your little toe is, or if you get some calluses on the outer part of your heel, you know, that part that sometimes collapses down, you might be better off sort of filing those down. Certainly related to filing down, you do want to make sure you do that with your toenails, right? Whether you remove them entirely or file them all down so that there's no pointy, jagged parts, especially bumping into the toe next to the toe, because you find that the jaggy toenail digs into the toe that's next to it and can cause a whole kinds of hurt, bother, and stuff. So that's worth filing down. But I think the calluses, a lot of it would depend on how thick they are, have you had them for years? Have you just developed them over the last couple of months? I think it really does depend.
Well, I think when you start your comments with, I sat down and spoke with John Vonhoff for a while about this. I'm afraid to even mention anything, but to your points, there's nothing worse than a callus underneath the hardened callus. Those are hard to deal with when you're out there. You know, what are you going to do
A blister?
Yeah,
you
a blister.
A blister. A blister. A blister underneath the callus.
Thanks. you know, what do you do with that? There's not a, Not even Scott's thread thing works with that. Now, to your point of long toenails, going downhill, bang, bang, and you're shoving that front of your foot down to the front of your shoe and trying to stop yourself from going down that hill any faster, you can really cause some trauma to that nail and end up with, you know, the toenail wanting to fall off there in the or losing it the next, you know, few days. That's a tough one. You do want to take care of toenails before a big race, especially with a lot of downhill.
That's a good point. Well, that's been a good round of drop bag. I learned a lot. I want to shift the conversation now to crack a brew with AJW. Tell us, you finished the first season of 8 episodes. Who did you have on those 8 episodes, Andy?
Well, first of all, I've got to thank you guys for, you know, hatching the idea of this podcast probably 3-4 years ago. It took us a while to get it out of the gate. You know, various things happened, but we finally jumped in, and of course, I jumped in so quickly that, you know, the infrastructure wasn't even ready to handle the podcast when we first came out, but. But it was a lot of fun. Ryan, who's our producer for both Trail Runner Nation, Ryan War, and for Crack a Brew with AJW, has been incredibly helpful in these, especially in the first season of 8. And it's been a blast. And like I said, I'm looking forward to season 2. So we started the season with Courtney DeWalter. She was fresh off her win at the Bandera 100K, which qualified her for Western States. And since she was already into Hard Rock, we spent a bulk of the time talking about the Western States Hard Rock Double, which she's going to be doing this summer, as well as her teaching career. She was a teacher before she became a professional ultra runner, and we spent a good deal of time talking about that. I had Jim Walmsley, who came in onto the podcast from France in the middle of his ski mountaineering season. We had a great conversation. In fact, he's going to run a 100 miler next month in April in Croatia to attempt to qualify for UTMB. I talked to Anton Kupichka, who is a legend in ultra running and in recent years has taken to gravel cycling. We had an extensive conversation about the connections between gravel bike racing and ultra running, and it's something I share with Anton as well as my son, Logan. We had Ellie Greenwood on, a three-time Ultra Runner of the Year, three-time Western States winner, still current female course record holder at Western States. That was a blast. And in the same Western States vein, probably the most sort of funny of the season one was race director of Western States, Craig Thornley, who came on the podcast and generously answered my questions, although we did talk somewhat seriously about all the trail work that needs to be done to get the race ready for this year. Arlen Glick, who has come onto the scene over the last year and a half, is a Mennonite from Ohio, does not do anything on social media, and is also, like Courtney, going to be doing the Western States Hard Rock Double this summer. So we talked a little bit about that. And then we had Nikki Kimball, also a three-time Women's Ultra Runner of the Year. And we spoke a lot about the 2006 Western States, where she finished third overall in a notoriously hot year. And then we closed out season one, kind of flipping things around on the urging of my family, and had my son Logan, who is himself a podcaster with Rodeo Adventure Labs podcasts, to interview me. So we've got an exciting list of guests getting ready for season 2. I'm not going to divulge them right now, of course, but needless to say, the energy and excitement of season 1 has gained a little bit of momentum, and I think we're in for a fun ride in season 2, which will take us right up to the start of Western States at the end of June.
Hey, Andy, I assume the list of guests that you had there were probably the ones that you initially thought, if I ask this person to come on my podcast, they'll say yes. So you had some kind of a relationship with them. Did you learn anything new about these people that maybe you didn't know beforehand?
Oh, yes. I'd say I learned something new about just about all of them, you know, ranging from, you know, the fact that Anton still has the fire to compete at the highest level in ultra running, to the way in which Nikki Kimball, even at her 10th Western States, which she also got into the top 10, was still battling what's been a almost a lifelong battle with depression. To Craig Thornley, who told me about his first exposure to Western States was when he and his brother Chris, they lived in the area near the course. Not only did they go camping down down from Auburn Lakes trails during Western States weekend, but they actually slept right on the trail, right on the trail. And then these runners came by and they were like, what are you doing here? So yeah, I think indeed, as someone who's been in the sport for 30 years, I do have a lot of, acquaintances and friends, and I do know a lot about them, but I think the beauty of the podcast, especially this format where we take three topics, every episode, I focus on three topics. Often they're things that I have in common with the guests, but not always, and just sort of explore those three topics and see where they take us. It's been a blast. And I also like the fact that I'm limiting it to 45 minutes, 45, 50 minutes. I don't want to call it short form, but keeping it short, keeping it manageable, keeping it to some, so that listeners' expectations are met, so that the guest's expectation is met, I think is really important. And so I enjoy that. And again, I suspect over the next couple of seasons, I'll be learning more and more about people I thought I knew a lot about and maybe didn't know as much as I thought I did.
You know, as we're lucky as you are to have Ryan along to do the editing and producing, and we get a chance to also have him on screen as we're doing this. He needs to hear what he needs to edit out and what he needs to fix, if there's anything, although we are an edit-free podcast and we don't feel we put too much work to him, but he's able to do that. What I watch is you're talking about your show is he's agreeing with you. He's smiling. I think he enjoyed being part of that podcast. I can see that it was a good show. And he's shaking his head. No, you can even talk, Ryan. Do you have the permission to click a button and actually be heard?
Yes, I do.
did you like the show? Would you give it a, you know, let's do a 5-star rating. What would you give it? A 0 to a 5? What do you do? For AGW?
I'd give it a 5. I really enjoyed all the episodes. I learned new things about trail running and the prominent figures in it. I really enjoyed myself.
what would you give the sound quality? How would you rate that with the show?
I think it's great. I think AJW always sounds great.
I was looking for you to put a little plug in for you there, Ryan. That's all.
Oh, he only sounds good because of me.
There you go. Now we're talking.
Andy, we're looking forward to season 2. I know you're not going to let the cat out of the bag and let us know who you have coming on in season 2. Do you have a time frame of when people can go and check that out? I guess probably the smartest thing for anyone that's listening this is to go and subscribe to the podcast, the Crack a Brew with AJW. It's available on all the platforms out there. But go to and subscribe so that you don't miss when season 2 starts. But do you have an idea of maybe when season 2 is going to launch?
Yeah, I do. And we, just so you know, too, we also have a website. It's a mouthful, crackabrewwithajw.com. You can see all of these. You can listen to all 8 of the episodes of season 1 on there. They're all on the website. I'm shooting for the third week in April, so just about 3-4 weeks from when we're recording this. I would say too, Scott, it was your idea. For listeners who are wondering, we release these on right around Saturday morning Pacific time, with the idea that maybe people would want to listen to them on their runs over their weekend runs, or if they're, you know, doing yard work or something like that. So it's a weekend release. You know, without letting the cat out of the bag, I do have a similar kind of blend of experienced guests, as experienced runner guests, retired runners, race directors, personalities in the sport, as well as people who have some very big, bold, ambitious goals for 2023 and beyond. So I think it will be a fun season two. And as I mentioned, we're going to wrap it up with the eighth episode of season two right on the eve of the Western States 100, which of course is the best race in the world. So
well, Andy, I've listened to not all of the episodes yet, but I've listened to most of them, and I thought they were wonderful. Of course, I know you, so it's you feel like you're running with a friend as you're listening to your podcast. But I learned something new from each of your guests. I'm excited to see, you know, a lot of us that may not have seen Anton out on the trails or out at the races for a long time kind of wondered where he went, unless you're following on social media and seeing his long bike treks. I'm actually interested to see, you know, what's going to happen with his trail running in the future.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it was exciting to hear that Nikki Kimball, after many years away, is going to be returning to Western States. It's wonderful when past champions return. She's going to return as a pacer and a crew for a friend of hers, a high school classmate. She shared that in her in my interview with her, and so it's always fun and exciting to, you know, I think for people who've won big races before, and then, you know, they're no longer in that stage of life, coming back to the scene of the crime, so to speak, is really difficult. I remember it took Ann Trason about 10 years to return to Western States as a participant and a supporter and a helper. And it's wonderful that after several years away, Nikki's coming back, because 10 consecutive top 10 finishes, 3 wins, 3 ultra runner of the years, a third place overall. She's just incredible. So, I mean, there's wonderful stories that came out of the podcast this year. Courtney going for the double, Arlen going for the double, Jim still in his quest to win UTMB, Anton maybe coming back to running ultras as soon as maybe the Canyons 100 miler next month. I mean, there's a lot to chew on, not to mention all that Craig talked about with the projects that are going on, not just the immediate term projects at Western States, which are helping the trail recover and doing rehab after the mosquito fire, but the long-term project, what they're calling the High Country Reroute Project, which is going to take 3 summers, that's finally starting this summer, you know, with significant grant money from the United States government, which will significantly alter and change the High Country portion of the Western States course. So we weren't just gabbing and talking about, you know, silly stuff on Crack a Brew with AJW, and we won't be doing that either in season 2. So tune on in.
Good. AJW, we appreciate you sitting down and giving us a different look at some of these people that we only follow from afar, but we get a chance to feel like we know them and we know you. And so listening to you speak to them, it's like inviting them into the, you know, our own room and our own home. So thanks for doing that.
My pleasure.
Well, with that, we hope you're finishing up your run or just getting into the hill repeats. But more importantly, you just need to go out and run.
Mas.
We've reached the end of the podcast, and Scott, it's kind of like reaching the finish line, and we'd like to give a few thanks to the people that made it happen.
First, we want to thank our Patreon members. If you want to become a patron, you can go to patreon.com/trailrunnernation, or you can go to our website and there's a support us tab at the top. We want to tell you what you get as a Patreon member. It's real important. Currently, we have a deal right now with Squirrel's Nut Butter. Sign up and you'll get a discount on your first order. That's a lot of give back, Freeman.
That's a lot of give back. And this show is produced and edited by the talented Ryan Warr.
Our social media is controlled by Yana Gibalova. If you need social media expertise, go to AscentMediaSolutions.com.
Our website and graphics are by Katie Burke. She's at openstudiohours.com.
Check out all of our prior episodes, our deals page, where there's lots of cool gear deals, and other stuff at trailrunnernation.com.
You can also find us at Twitter at We Are Nation, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and check out our show notes, Scott.
Now run.
Mas.
Inspired by Patagonia's wilderness, Weiss creates products capable of withstanding the toughest conditions for doing what you love the most, running long in the heart of nature. Their vests, packs, flasks, poles, and accessories are perfect for long-distance runners. Visit Weiss.run and get 10% off when you use the code TRN.